Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. For five intense days in December of 2017, what became known as the Legion Lake Fire burned fiercely as firefighters battled to contain it. Jay Wickham is a fire management officer with South Dakota Wildland Fire. He joins me now in the studio. Welcome, Jay. Thanks for being here.
You bet.
And we're going to talk about forest management after the fire, but we'd also like to expand that conversation. And for that, we've included Pat Johnson. She's with the South Dakota State University West River Ag Center. She specializes in rangeland management. Pat Johnson, thanks for being here as well.
Thank you.
All right. So, Jay, let's start with you and give me an idea of what comes next. Like, what does the park look like right now? It's March. It's mid-March, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's happening next? What are we looking for?
Salvage logging. That's what's happening. A lot of salvage logging. Right now, they're logging a little over 8,000 acres in the park, salvage logging the trees that burned. Research has shown that ponderosa pine trees, when 30% of the canopy is either burned or scorched, that it's a very high likelihood that tree will die. And so they're salvage logging all those trees that burned, primarily south of the French Creek Natural Area. That's where the most intense fire was.
So to be clear, salvage logging means you're literally walking through there, finding out what needs to come down, taking it down, using it if it's useful.
Yep, exactly. Okay. And they're using equipment primarily to do that. And so taking the trees, they're still good logs. You can still make good lumber out of them.
Okay.
So those trees that burn, they're in the process of logging all those and getting them out of the park. So, okay. And that's kind of what it looks like right now. And a little bit of snow left on the ground, but primarily black.
How long does that kind of an effort take? Is that season after season, or is that
June
something?
8th? They'll be done. That's That's the last date that they'll be available to do that. This is a contract, and so the contract ends June 8th, is when the last of the logging. They hope to be done before then, obviously, because of tourist season. But sure. That's when the contract ends.
And who's doing that?
Custer State Park is doing that. Nyman Timber and Sanford Logging are the two logger companies that bought the timber in the park.
When visitors come through the park, or when South Dakotans come through the park in the coming months, what are they going to see? How are they going to sort of
green grass, hopefully.
A lot of it.
Green grass.
Yeah, that's what happens next?
Yes, a lot of green grass. You will see a lot of some of the younger pine trees, the smaller, younger pine trees, you know, which historically in the Black Hills, that's what fire did. Fire thinned out the young trees and pruned the lower branches of the larger trees. So you can see that effect from the fire in the park. And then,
right. Give me an idea of, you live right there in the park. During the summer, obviously this Legion Lake fire was a winter fire, mm-hmm. but on a day-to-day basis, what's your job look like?
Day-to-day basis, so we have three seasonal firefighters that we staff an engine in Custer State Park, and so we make ourselves available for wildland fires within the Black Hills area, and so we do a briefing in the morning with our seasonal employees, tell them about the weather, the fire danger, the fuel moistures, those types of things, so they're prepared for what type of fire that we may get, and then we spend a lot of days out in the woods cutting trees off of the fire trails that we use for access into our fires, or if there's any hazard trees or special trees that need to be cut that the park would need, we go out and help them do that as well.
Give me an idea of how you got into this line of work and what you love about it, because this is a whole lot of preparation and then a whole lot of chaos, terror, mm-hmm. those are not the right words, but some excitement all of a sudden, mm-hmm. and a high risk job that happens all at once. Mm-hmm. What's the draw for you? What's the appeal?
How I got into it, I actually used to work for the U.S. Forest Service. Started in 94. I moved to the Black Hills from Nebraska. And fire was kind of collateral duty for me. Then I actually have a wildlife biology degree. And so that's in the... And then they asked me to... part of my job was required that I had to be a firefighter. And so... And it is kind of an adrenaline rush.
That is the word.
Is a joy. that is the fun of it. Yeah. But also... it's kind of like a football team, I tell you, that, like when you come on the scene of a fire and you have to work as a team and you have to make quick decisions and you have to work with people that a lot of times you don't know, and you have to come up with an idea of how to suppress the fire. And,
right.
Makes your brain work, makes your adrenaline work. And when you're done, and you look back and see what you accomplished with these people, that the work that went into it, sometimes sweat and sometimes, a lot of backbreaking work, and just a good feeling that you really worked hard and accomplished something.
You have to be right, but you can't be right all the time because the weather is going to do something that is totally, mm-hmm. I mean, you have to be very good at your job. Do you feel that pressure on a, you know, during an event, do you, you know, second guess yourself? Is the training just kick in?
Plan for contingency. Have a plan, a plan B and a plan C. That's basically so that if the first plan that you thought would work doesn't work, you know, we call drawing a box is what we call. So we kind of, if we come on scene of a fire, depending on how that fire is behaving, as far as its fire behavior, its rate of spread, you know, how large the flames are, we decide kind of where we think we can stop that fire. That's our first box. And if that plan, as we're trying to enact that box, that plan, you better have a secondary box and a secondary plan to put in place when that first plan maybe doesn't work.
Yeah, and you're making those decisions fairly quickly.
Fairly quickly, yeah. You have to make them fairly quickly. And there's been a lot of research done on that. You know, most of the time when we make our decisions on the fire ground, it's because we call it making slides. So as you get more experience, you make a slide, and then when you're making decisions at that type and that pace at that quick level, you just kind of, your brain automatically pulls a similar experience that it had, and your brain makes a decision based on this similar experience, or making a slide is what we call it. So that's kind of how it works. So that's why it's all about experience, and the training you're talking about is good, but a lot of it's being out there, seeing it happen, and then once you see it happen, you can make a decision based on previous experience.
How well do you know that forest?
I've lived in the park for 12 years.
Yeah, right. And that's part of it, too. You need to know what's where and how it's going to
be. I've hiked the woods with my family on weekends, and I go out there and work every day, and we do projects for the park. And so I was very helpful, I think, to the team that came in when they were making decisions on what to do, you know, that where we can go, roads at work and that kind of stuff. So.
Right. I want to bring Pat Johnson into the conversation with SDSU's West River Ag Center. And Pat, you work in a slightly different world dealing with rangeland management. Give me a little bit of your background and what happens at the West River Ag Center.
Well, the West River Ag Center is a satellite center, actually, for South Dakota State University. And we do research, we do extension. A lot of the folks that are there work with producers. I work on rangelands. I'm a range ecologist. I work with grasslands primarily, mostly east of the Black Hills. And a lot of extension happens. We take information from the university that is generated through scientific studies and provide that to land management agencies, producers, all sorts of folks.
What's the difference between rangeland and grasslands? Usage?
Generally, we in range management, we say that all grasslands are rangelands, but we also include some desert environments as well as savannas and various, but grass, something that can be consumed by an herbivore, a foraging grazer, is kind of generally lumped into rangelands.
Interesting. So how did you get into, you know, where are you from and what draws you to this, or whatever part of that you want to answer, what draws you into this line of work?
Well, I'm from a lot of different places. Yeah, my parents moved around a lot, so it's hard to say where I'm from, but I got into it kind of by accident. I went to Utah State University after getting a biology and mathematics degree, didn't have a clue what I was going to do, and discovered rangeland management and range science, range ecology, and fell in love with it, and then have been at South Dakota State University for 30 years.
All right. So forest fires in this environment much different than in an environment like Custer State Park. This is a big risk. This is something that you and your colleagues look at all the time and prepare for?
Well, we grassland fires are a huge risk, especially when we're in dry conditions. And we've been in dry conditions since, summer of 2016. And when you get the combination of drought, high winds, warm temperatures, and something to start a fire, you end up having grass fires that can move absolutely stunningly quickly and consume a lot of forages and create a lot of damage. There is a useful good use of fire in many cases, but a lot of the folks in this region are not particularly fond of fire. Our Cottonwood fire that happened in October of 2016 confirmed for a lot of people that fire is dangerous and can create a lot of problems for folks.
What's significant about that that stands out in people's memory?
Well, it was very fast moving. It was very large, over 40,000 acres, killed a lot of livestock, burned a lot of fences, and because it occurred in October, it occurred before we had much moisture. It occurred right. during a drought period. We had dry soils already. We didn't get any snow catch that winter and spring, and so started off with very poor production on those rangelands. And that has created a lot of forage availability issues and very likely is going to be something that we have to deal with for a few more years for that to catch back up.
And then how much did the drought of 2017, I guess, you know, the dry conditions that we just had last summer, how much are we going to continue to see that impact in South Dakota?
That was sort of the double whammy. You have a drought in 2016, fire, so you've got the plants that are going to recover require moisture. We didn't get much snow. Then the summer of 2017, we didn't get much moisture. So production very much lagged. It lagged regardless of whether it was on a burn or an unburned area, but it was particularly difficult, I think, for a lot of the plants to recover from that. I mean, these are perennial plants. Most of them will recover, but it's going to take a little bit more time. And if we get another drought this summer, it's going to add to the misery.
All right. So how much of an impact does that have on ranchers?
Huge.
Huge.
It's huge.
Yeah.
Fire in and of itself, the folks who were who have had their rangelands burned, whether it's in South Dakota or anywhere else, Montana had huge fires. Texas had huge fires. And what burns at that point in time is the forage that they were planning on having their livestock graze. So for the Cottonwood fire, a lot of their winter grazing was burned up, and so then you have to provide hay to cover that loss. And then you have the subsequent year, you want to be able to put livestock onto pastures, and so if you don't have much production, it affects your ability to stock them. And so you may have to reduce your stocking rates, find more hay, do something else to recover for a while. And as the drought extends, if it does, we end up then just piling more problems on top of what we already have.
Can ranchers prepare for this, or can they only react to it?
You can, wildfire is really hard to prepare for.
Right.
You can protect your buildings by, you know, appropriate management of grasses and fuels around your buildings, and you can have a plan for what will happen, but a wildfire is particularly difficult to plan for. They plan for drought. And most ranchers have some sort of drought management plan, so they decide, at this point, I'm going to make these decisions. Do I keep these livestock? Do I sell them? Do I move them? Do I buy hay? There are a lot of decisions that have to be made, and you can set a plan in motion if a drought appears to be coming, or if you're in the middle of a drought, then you need to be actually dealing with your plan. But wildfire is harder, much harder.
Let's talk about livestock and wildlife during a fire. Is there a way to protect those animals? That just seems like such a big task to get your mind around. Jay, talk to me about
really,
the park.
Really, I mean, in a best case scenario, they have forewarning and they're able to, you know, gather them up and take them somewhere else and get them out of the area. But other than that, a lot of times what ranchers will do if they can't do that, they'll just cut their fences to allow the cattle to get out of the pastures. The right. fence is what holds them in. And so if they cut those fences, it allows those cattle to move away from the fire by themselves and to protect themselves. But the grass fires she's talking about, too, that sometimes the rate of spread on those is... It would really surprise people, I think, if you watched how fast a grass fire moved across the prairie. When you're talking winds, they had similar to the Cottonwood fire that, you know, it's very difficult for livestock to get out of the way of a fire that's moving that fast.
And you put people's lives in danger.
Right.
If, you know, the fire is coming at your property, they have to get out there, cut the fence, and hope to get the cattle through that those holes mm-hmm. in the fence. And that puts people's lives in danger as well as the livestock losses.
Mm-hmm. How do the cattle behave?
Usually they will run.
Yeah.
But often, sometimes they get confused or they go the wrong direction.
Yeah.
So hopefully, I think a lot of the livestock at the Cottonwood Fire moved out of the way, but there were massive losses, really. Mm. Some of the ranchers lost very large numbers of animals, both with during the fire itself. They were killed, but they also had animals that were injured that then subsequently had to be put down because they were not going to be able to either sustain their injury or they were suffering. So.
Right. And then maybe you can't put a dollar figure on that, but how much can be lost financially then for a rancher just all at once like that?
Yeah. Thousands of dollars. You know, if you consider the cost of, livestock losses, fencing costs, you know, fences are very expensive, and then just the forages that they have to replace. The forages that they had planned on using for winter grazing, for example. Well, if you don't have that, if all you've got is dirt and a few charred pieces of plant crowns, you've got to bring in hay, and hay is very expensive. Mm. So tens of thousands of dollars, maybe more, depends on the size of the operation.
Do you look ahead to 2018 and make predictions?
Ask me in November.
Right. I mean, I guess that's legit. And if the answer is no, then the answer is no. But
we do prepare. Yeah. We have 3 months, 6 months predictions, that our meteorologists make, then that we can make based on, you know, we have weather stations throughout the area that we fight fire in. And based on the information that we get from those weather stations, we do some calculations. It comes out in what's called the National Fire Danger Rating System. So we do make some predictions, but anybody that watches weather and studies weather realizes that weather is very, very hard, especially long-term weather, is very, very hard to predict. And so I think the science has advanced. They've gotten much better at it. But I think you'll find very few meteorologists that will stake much on their claims.
And drought is also hard to predict. We have in this region, if we have a drought, we oftentimes have droughts in clusters of years. Sometimes we have a single year drought. That's, but we've had 2 years of drought now. We may be looking at a third year of drought in 2018. We'll be looking really, the precipitation period that gives us the most moisture starts now and ends about the end of May. And that's going to tell quite a bit about whether we get into drought and or we continue this drought. And then that will also feed into the fire danger for both the Black Hills and out on the plains.
Mm. Pat Johnson, Jay Wickham, thank you so much for being here. Please come back and keep us posted on this as time moves on in 2018. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.